The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
So, Harry.
Yes?
This is going to be an interesting one, because, let's be honest, this might be the highest-stakes pay-per-view that we've ever actually reviewed. Except maybe for WrestleMania 1, but that wasn't a pay-per-view.
Well, technically it was closed-circuit television, but it's the same level of interest. Yeah, this was kind of make or break for the World Wrestling Federation, because the world's most dangerous man on the, I guess you could say, the world's most dangerous pay-per-view at this point. And no, I'm not referring to Ken Shamrock, although he is on this show.
Yeah, and I mean, we have a show with the baddest man on the planet, and no, we're not actually talking about Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, they would interact with each other, though.
Ooh! Anyway, hi, folks. Welcome in, once again, to Wrestling Unwrapped. I am your host. My name is Patrick Ketza, and joining me, as always, Mr. Harry Broadhurst. And as we
insert... Insert really bad Simpsons Dr. Nick impersonation right here. Carry on.
Yeah, well, anyway.
How was your weekend?
Well, it was a lot of fun for the most part until I got in trouble for something. Nothing I can talk about on air.
I feel like I'm lucky to have a voice today. For those of you who don't know, listening to the show, hi, I'm Harry, by the way. I play commentate for a local company here in Ohio called Real Action Pro Wrestling. Well, as of this past show here, I was also the ring announcer. And in case you haven't noticed, play-by-play commentary does one thing to your voice. Ring announcing is a whole different animal. I am frankly stunned I have a voice left to do this podcast with.
Well, hopefully we can go nice and quick, and you can go and soothe your voice.
Yes, I sent a lot of honey tea and cough drops in my very near future.
I wouldn't blame you. So, yes, as we mentioned, this was one of the highest stakes pay-per-views that the WWF would ever put together. It is our final look at March of 1998, and we are going back to March the 29th, 1998, as we talk about WrestleMania 14, featuring the main event of the Heartbreak Kid, the crippled Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels, facing Stone Cold Steve Austin for the WWF Championship. And, oh, we should probably mention the Enforcer, the baddest man on the planet. I almost said Stone Cold. Iron Mike Tyson being essentially the outside referee. And at this point, we're at a point where WWE is at a make-or-break point, because by now, WCW has kicked their ass in the Monday Night Wars for about the last year and a half. Vince McMahon is still coming off of the Montreal Screwjob, where he essentially told Bret Hart, I don't have the money to pay you because the business was still down. That was November of 97, a mere 5 months before. So, what do? They pretty much bank everything on getting Iron Mike Tyson to appear for one match and make appearances on Raw, because what we'll probably let know later, or just let know right now, is he is actually a member of DX. So it is all on the line for one match. I would still say that this might be the highest stakes outside of WrestleMania 1 that we have covered, considering if Vince fails and Iron Mike Tyson doesn't bring in the viewers and the fans like Vince hopes, WWF's in trouble. A lot of trouble. So... It is definitely high stakes. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. And the big thing about it, too, is you were just mentioning there that Vince himself was backing out of his ironclad contract with Bret Hart that was supposed to be like a lifelong deal with the WWF from when Bret Hart came back around the Survivor Series in 1996 to face Stone Cold Steve Austin, that he didn't have the money to pay Bret here, and yet now here he is dropping seven figures into the bank account of one Mike Tyson.
Yeah. I mean, there is still quite a difference between dropping seven figures for Iron Mike Tyson for one event or dropping eight figures to Bret. So there's a difference there, but even still, it's a very gutsy thing. So I say let's not waste any more time, and before we get into the formal review, as we always do, here's Mr. Harry Broadhurst with the results for WrestleMania 14.
Indeed, as Patrick mentioned, we are March 29th, 1998, from the Fleet Center in Boston, Massachusetts, the now TD Arena. And
Garden.
Here are... Huh?
TD Garden.
Whatever, same difference. It's a freaking bank. Here are your WrestleMania 14 results. LOD 2000 win a tag team battle royal, last eliminating the Smoking Guns. What?
No.
Rephrase. Last eliminating the new Midnight Express of Bart Gunn and Bombastic Bob, Holly. At 8 minutes and 20 seconds, I can see Jim Cornette having a coronary from here. Taka Michinoku retains the light heavyweight title, defeating Aguila, better known as Asa Rios, with a Michinoku driver at 5 minutes and 59 seconds. Triple H retains the European title, pinning Owen Hart with a pedigree at 11 minutes and 28 seconds. Mark Murrow and Sable defeat the team of Gold Dust and Luna Vachon when Sable pins Luna with a TKO at 9 minutes and 11 seconds. The Rock retains the Intercontinental Championship by disqualification over the aforementioned Ken Shamrock at 4 minutes and 49 seconds on a reverse decision. Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie Funk win the WWF Tag Team titles in a dumpster match over the New Age Outlaws, Epidibit, but that's all, folks, at 9 minutes and 59 seconds. The Undertaker pins Kane, back when it was still an original thing, with a third tombstone at 16 minutes and 58 seconds. And your main event...
That, real quick, 10 years before that became a thing where you would need more than one.
And your main event sees Stone Cold Steve Austin, or to pay tribute to Jim Ross, Stone Cold! Stone Cold! Okay, I'm done. By the way, our thoughts and prayers to the Ross family right now on the passing of Jim's wife, Jan.
Indeed. Rest in peace, Jim.
Steve Austin wins the WWF Heavyweight Championship from Shawn Michaels after Kick Wham Stunner at 20 minutes and 3 seconds.
Thank you very much, Harry. And before we get going, we should mention that Wrestling Unwrapped is a presentation of the W2M Network. For more information, including our old episodes and written reviews, which we need to get back into doing at some point, although this is a really bad week to do that, be sure to check out the website at w2mnet.com as well.
In addition, we are sponsored by the Madhouse Toy Chest, stores.ebay.com/Madhouse Toy Chest. If you are a fan of anything wrestling, you can find it inside of the Toy Chest. DVDs, action figures, VHS tapes, magazines, posters, there are little tiny WCW racing cars, little Hollywood Hogan foam basketballs. You can get some Hulk Hogan. It's like a Hulk Hogan stress ball. It would be perfect for you, Patrick.
I'd break it in an instant.
Well, if any of you are interested in that and want to save the stress ball from the enmity that is Patrick Ketza, then by all means, feel free to visit our friend Jason Kunkel and his Madhouse Torchest. That is stores.ebay.com/Madhouse Torchest. Mention that you heard this advertisement on Wrestling Unwrapped, and Jason will include a free gift with your purchase.
So, Vince McMahon puts it all on the line one more time. And he does it by trying to bring in an outside entity one more time. The only thing is, this time, it pays off.
Thank God.
The Austin era begins in 3, 2, 1. This is WrestleMania 14. And before we even get to the opening match, I have to mention something. And it's one of the rare times you'll actually get me willingly talking about pre-show stuff. So we should also mention that the night was filled with basically any DX entrance, so Triple H and Shawn Michaels, had a performance by Chris Warren and the DX band. Just, you know, to make it very special, apparently. They also, apparently, if you could call it that, did America the Beautiful and the National Anthem. This would be on, I believe, Sunday Night Heat, or if that wasn't a thing, whatever the pre-show was, maybe Free for All. It is pretty much universally regarded as the worst version of those songs ever made. And it was so bad, the Boston crowd booed. How badly do you have to butcher America the Beautiful and the National Anthem to be booed?
Ask Roseanne Barr. She kind of set the standard for that.
Sure. Moving on, though. So we open up with the final two teams being introed into a 15-team battle royal. It is standard battle royal rules. Over the top rope, you're eliminated. And in this case, because it's 15 tag teams, if you're eliminated, your partner is also eliminated. Thank God. Otherwise, this would have been about a 20-minute match. So, do we have to run down all the teams?
No, mostly because the vast majority of the teams are irrelevant. I saw gun on my last eliminated marking, and I just immediately thought of the Smoking Guns. And then I'm like, wait a minute, no, that's not right. Billy's in the New Age Outlaws by this point.
Yep, it was Bodacious Bart and Bombastic Bob. God help.
That was a spark plug of a gimmick.
More like a butt plug of a gimmick.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
And yes, Jim Cornette does have a coronary, considering the fact that he's at ringside. Because this was during the time of the NWA invasion. If you remember that. No, you don't. Nobody does.
I do, actually. I remember Barry Windham challenging for the NWA title on an episode of Raw against Jeff Jarrett.
God help us. That happened to be the North American title, not the world title.
Either way, not a boo-boo. All right, by the way, before we forget, runtime for the show, 2 hours, 43 minutes, 28 seconds.
Yes, because we're still at a time where WrestleMania was under 3 hours. Boy, I miss those days.
Those were the days.
Remember, 7 hours next week.
All right, so let's talk about LOD 2000, shall we?
Yeah, might as well. You know what the best part of LOD 2000 was?
Sunny.
Yep, because this was before everything hit the fan.
Yeah,
before Sunny
and by
became
everything,
cloudy.
And by everything, we mean Darren Drozdov.
Yeah.
He was still dealing with Prince Albert in a can at this point, if I'm not mistaken.
Probably. Actually, no, he was dealing with the street version of the Prince Albert. The actual Prince Albert. Because remember, he was a tattooist and a piercer.
I'm aware of what a Prince Albert is. We don't need to expand upon that. Thank you.
No, God, no.
I like to keep... These shows have been DX rated enough over the course of the last 2 weeks. I'd like to keep this one kind of on course if we can.
Yes, I absolutely agree. So, moving on. LOD 2000, this was the reintroduction of the Legion of Doom for the new millennium. Mind you, at this point, there was already talk of new millennium stuff because the reason I bring this up is M&M was the sponsor and they were already being billed as the candy of the new millennium. You know, M&M, 2000, blah, 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 woo, woo, woo. So LOD, this was the new LOD. They would not even make it to 2000. Hell, I don't even think they made it to 1999.
I can 100% guarantee you they did not make it to 1999. Because Hawk would not have his crap together by the end of 1998. And I hate to speak ill of the dead here, but let's be honest. Towards the end of his WWF run, Michael Hagstrom was kind of a mess.
Just a bit. And then Draws pushes him off the top of the Titantron.
Really? You had to go there?
Well, you're bringing it up. Let's put it this way. This was not a good time for LOD by any stretch of imagination. And unfortunately, yeah, by the end of the year, they would sadly be gone by the WWF, from the WWF. And just, rest in peace, Mike, Rogue Warrior Hawk. LOD wins, and I believe they would get a title shot at Forgiven in Your House. Thank you, Jim Ross. That's one. Unforgiven in Your House, which ironically was in Chicago, where they would fail to win the tag team championships. So,
I actually would like to cover that show at some point down the road, if only for the...
No.
If only for the oddity that is the first ever Inferno match.
That's why I'm saying no.
Well, deal with it, Buttercup.
We're booked through for a while, so I don't have to deal with it. Anyway, moving on, our next contest for the Light Heavyweight Championship... Takamichi Noku versus Aguila. I'll go with Aguila.
I believe it's Aguila.
I know Fink says Aguila, and actually, so does JR.
Ace of freaking Rios, how's that?
Yeah.
Poppy Chulo. Better?
Oh. The reason Lita's in the Hall of Fame. Why? Because... she debuted with him.
100% legit.
Yeah.
Otherwise, she'd have still been Miss Congeniality for Doring and Roadkill in ECW, and he would have proposed with another con. Never mind. Moving on.
So, this contest actually is really good. It's not long at all, but I think it was kind of the... kicking the ass for the crowd, because there's a lot of high-flying action, very fast-paced. And it's actually a very good match. It's just, this match couldn't go first, just because if you did this match and then did the Battle Royal, the intros alone would kill the crowd. So I don't mind the fact that this went second. I thought this was actually a very good match.
Too short to ultimately mean anything, but good for what it was. It was there in order to get the crowd hyped up, in order to have the high spots, to have the people flying around the gym or around the arena, in order to get that crowd off of its hands from a battle royal. Because battle royals aren't necessarily always the most exciting thing, and let's be honest, the Legion of Doom wasn't the team that it was before. Whereas I think that this kind of action right here in regards to the Light Heavyweight title match here, it allowed for them to show a different side of the WWF that you really weren't seeing a whole lot of. Let's not forget, the very first Light Heavyweight champion was crowned only 3 months prior at the In Your House Degeneration X pay-per-view when Takamichi Noku beat Brian Christopher Lawler.
Thank God for that. But... so, yeah, Taka ends up winning, and I don't actually know how much longer he would hold on to the belt. So,
Christian's forthcoming relatively soon after this, so I'm going to say, no, he's not, actually, now that I think about it. Wouldn't Taka drop it to, like, Dwayne Gill?
I'm trying to find out.
All right, well, while you do that, while you find out who he dropped it to, we'll talk about the next contest, shall we?
Yes.
All right, while he looks that up, I'll go into our next contest. So our next contest is for the European title, and it is Triple H of the, not quite yet of D-Generation X. D-Generation X will not form until the very next night on Raw. Well, the new version, D-Generation X. At this point, it was just Triple H, China, and Shawn Michaels as DX.
Here.
The version of
here.
People would come.
Can I put it like this? This is D-Generation X. The DX army formed the next night.
That's fair.
Also, it was Christian.
Really? Wow. Okay. I don't think Christian wouldn't have debuted until the end of 1998, though, right?
He would hold on to the belt until October 98.
All right. So it wasn't probably at like the October in your house pay per view then. All right. Anyways.
And he would lose it to Dwayne Gill. So moving on.
Okay. All right, so back to the European title. It is Triple H defending the European title against the King of Hearts, the last remaining Hart, the Black Hart, Owen Hart, with China and Commissioner Slaughter handcuffed to each other at ringside. Patrick, take it away.
Indeed, but it's judging by how things had gone for the past few years, it's weird seeing Owen Hart being cheered. Because this would be the first time that he'd be cheered since, 92? WrestleMania 8?
Well, that depends. Do you count when the Hart Foundation was in Canada, back in the Hart Foundation versus Team Austin Wars in 1997?
No. Not really. I get what you're saying, though, but even still, This was a great match. However, I'm asking you this as for the actual reason. Why was Slaughter handcuffed to China?
In order to try to prevent China from interfering from like she had before. Because there was a previous Owen Hart opportunity at the European title that it resulted in China interfering and causing a disqualification, if memory serves.
Yes. What doesn't Slaughter do?
He does not prevent China from interfering because the finish that we get is China throwing powder into Sergeant Slaughter's face, low-blowing Owen, and Owen stumbling into the pedigree for the pinfall.
And not even just that, but at one point, I believe China pulls Triple H to the rope while Slaughter's trying to hold her back and just fails miserably. Yeah, remember, folks, this is 1998 China. This is jet to the gills, China. China could probably lug Sergeant Slaughter around with her freaking pinky at this point. Even Sergeant Slaughter's fat ass. Because let's face it, he's fat here.
Oh, yeah. He is definitely no longer G.I. Joe-shaped Slaughter.
Yeah. So, I mean, the match was actually, once again, very, very good. A lot of back-and-forth action. There were definitely some false finishes. Owen had Triple H in the sharpshooter when China interfered for the first time. And then the ending just becomes absolute and complete chaos because, like Harry just mentioned, China then throws powder into Sergeant Slaughter's eyes. Owen sees this and goes to accost China like an idiot. And I think Triple H knees Owen in the back. So Owen turns around and then, you know, China splits the uprights. Triple H hits the pedigree and Triple H retains the European Championship. So
This is the European Championship that was pretty much Christmas gifted to him from Shawn Michaels.
December 7th, 1997, I want to say.
Yes, when Triple H and Shawn Michaels had a match.
That went all of 1 minute and 23 seconds, or 3 times the length of a 2016 Bill Goldberg match.
Actually, it was almost 4 times the length of a 2017 Goldberg match. Dingle's hat.
Goldberg and Lesnar for the title next Sunday. Son of a bitch.
God, I hope it doesn't go last. Otherwise, I'm going to make the Revolver versus Wrestle Circus show awfully early.
All right, anywho, back to the show. On to better and brighter things here. Let's talk about the juggernaut that was Fate Ringo Murrow at the time.
God. Or the juggernauts. Of her?
Yeah. Well, yes. We are DX rated tonight. Let's talk about the two biggest moneymakers in the WWF at this point. And I am, of course, referring to Sable's babes.
Yeah.
Mark Merrill and Sable take on Goldust and Luna Vachon in only the second ever intergender match at WrestleMania. Pop quiz, Patrick.
Third.
Okay. Savage and Sherry against Dusty and Sapphire. What's the other one?
You're going to laugh and you're going to hate me, but it is called an intergender match. Doink and Dink versus Luna and Bam Bam at WrestleMania 10.
Oh, bullcrap. I mean, technically,
hey,
yes. Luna's
up Luna there. Was in the match.
Whatever. Anyways, the second ever 2-on-2 intergender tag team match. Where both teams have a woman. Better?
What? You hate me so much right now because I proved you wrong.
It's not even that. It's more of the fact that you freaking brought up Dink. You are a Dink. Anyway.
Hey! I weren't watching all the WrestleMania, so I had to watch it.
So, Sable picks up the win, pinning Luna with Mark Murrow's TKO. This is the, I guess you could say, this is the beginning of the breakout for the Rena Murrow-Sable super push that would continue all the way until she would leave the company for discrimination later in 1998.
98?
Was it 98 or 99 that she quit the company?
It had to be 99. She wrestled at WrestleMania 15.
She did against Tori, you're right. So then it would have had to have been like May, or it would have had to have been like June or July of 1999 then. All right, so. But this is the beginning of the breakup for Sable and Murrow as well, though.
Yeah. And real quick, something that bears mention. Murrow hits a TKO on Goldust. Sable hits the TKO on Luna. Sable hit the TKO better, which is kind of pathetic. Then again, Luna's not quite as girthy in comparison to Goldust being on Merrill's shoulders, but still, Sable nailed it. I couldn't believe it.
Well, at least she wasn't horrendously powerbombing people yet.
No, she did that in this match, too.
She even busted out a Sable bomb. See, I don't remember her hitting the Sable bomb. I remember the TKO, and I remember Murrow getting all butthurt the next night on Raw because of the fact that she hit the TKO and got the pinfall in the match.
I think she does hit a power bomb. It might be on Luna. I may be thinking of something else, but I thought she hits one. Not important. But, yeah, there's the old story that I'm trying to remember the time frame here. So when Sable hits Mark Merrow with the Sable bomb on Raw,
whenever that was, I'm trying to think of the date and I can't think of it. Supposedly, that following Saturday, there was supposed to be a house show where Mark Merrow faced off with Stone Cold Steve Austin for the title. Sable hits the powerbomb, and Stone Cold supposedly immediately goes, "So who's my new opponent on Saturday? Because I'm not facing him if he's willing to do that."
Sadly, I'd believe that.
I don't blame him either.
Well, not to mention, there are all kinds of rumors about Austin being something of an impetuous dick around this time frame as well. I give you credit for 360. I give you Crapper 316 with Goldust, and we're not even up to his treatment of Jeff Jarrett upon Jarrett's return to the company.
Although Jeff Jarrett is in the company on this night.
He is? Not
yep.
Bull? Oh, yes, he was. He was in the,
yes, he is.
He's in the Battle Royal.
Nope.
Where the fuck is Jeff Jarrett? I legit don't remember Jarrett being on this show.
Not only is Jarrett on this show, so is Tennessee Lee. Oh, as a matter of fact, Jarrett's in the next match.
Tennessee Lee, a.k.a. Colonel Robert Fuller, introduces Jeff Jarrett and Jennifer Flowers. They serve as guest announcers for the next contest. All right, yeah, I see. And I did not have time this week, unfortunately, to rewatch this show due to the fact that I had prior commitments for this particular weekend. But I'm using J.D. Dunn's review over at 411 Mania. If you get the opportunity, 411 Mania, look under the Dunn list, and you can find WrestleMania 14 there. If you get the chance, check out J.D. He's a great read. I've used his review for many a show in order to refresh my memory about certain things. And apparently,
yes, because you always plug them when you do.
Hey. Dude's a great dude.
I know. So Sable and Merrow pick up the win, and Merrow acts like he won, even though Sable won, and let's move on.
All right, so you were talking about this match as if it didn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things as a blow-off. You were incorrect, though. This is not their blow-off.
The tag match?
No, the Intercontinental title match is next.
When the hell did I ever treat it like it was a blow-off? No, it wasn't. I know it wasn't.
We talked about it inside of our Facebook chat. You said Rock Shamrock was underwhelming for a blow-off.
Our personal or our group? Because I don't remember ever saying that.
I'm almost certain you said it in one of the conversations we were having that you were underwhelmed by Shamrock and Rock. But given everything that they tried to jam onto the show, let's consider here, Patrick. This is a 9-match show. Yeah, this year WrestleMania is 14 matches in 7 hours. So you know, take from that what you will.
Yeah. I know it's not the blow off because the blow off wouldn't be for a while. Hell, they face off in the finals of the King of the Ring. It's how Shamrock won it.
So the blow off would be King of the Ring, actually, where Shamrock wins the King of the Ring crown.
Not the Intercontinental title. Figure that one out. Anyway, so it's Rock versus Ken Shamrock for The Rock's Intercontinental Championship.
Is Rock still Intercontinental Champion come King of the Ring? I don't think he is.
No.
I want to say Triple H is the Intercontinental Champion by that point. Because I think he would have beaten Rock. I think you would have beaten Rock for it. Maybe it's Fully Loaded in July or whatever they call the July in your house.
That sounds about right. Hang on.
All right, while he's doing that, I'll give you guys the explanation here. All right, so technically speaking, Ken Shamrock does win this match by submission with the ankle lock. However, there's that whole he's in his zone thing. He doesn't necessarily know when to let go of moves. Grumpus, grumpus, grumble, grumble, grumble. Reverse decision, disqualification. Rock retains the title.
Well, I mean, there is the fact that, you know, Shamrock attacked referees.
Hey, if those referees were dumb enough to get around Shamrock when he's in his zone, they deserve to be attacked. I ain't trying to end up on the business end of Ken Shamrock.
Rock would be the Intercontinental Championship going into King of the Ring. Rock would lose the belt to Triple H in the ladder match.
In the ladder match at SummerSlam, a show we'll be covering in August.
Indeed, because we're going to redo this idea with August. And in that case, it will be the 20th anniversary. No, well, it'll still be the 19th anniversary. Jesus.
Your math is just garbage.
Shut up. Anyway, but yeah, Shamrock absolutely decimates The Rock in this. And basically, this was, how do we keep the Rock, or how do we keep the belt on The Rock without making Ken Shamrock look weak or stupid? And I present to you, well, he still looks stupid. Let's be honest, because he still looks like an idiot because, A, he attacked the referee, B, he wouldn't let go of the move, so C, he got what he deserved.
Yeah, he looks stupid because he ends up costing himself the Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah. You know, and then this coming after the controversy of what happened at Royal Rumble, where once again, Ken Shamrock actually pins Rock clean as a whistle in the middle of the ring, except he doesn't win the belt because the referee finds brass knucks in his trunks. Well, the brass knucks came from The Rock, who used the brass knucks on Shamrock and then stuffed them into Shamrock's trunks. So, once again, The Rock, in this case, the first time The Rock outsmarted him, this time Ken Shamrock just looks like an idiot. Pure and simple. So, and then, like we said, he never actually win the belt.
To be fair, let's make this long. Shamrock was never portrayed as the brightest crayon in the box.
He was never the sharpest spoon in the drawer.
I see what you did there.
Quite frankly, I think he actually was the spoon. Anyway. Useful, but can't really cut it. Anyway.
Moving on to our next contest. You should feel ashamed of yourself.
I do not.
You should. It is the Vining Trash Receptacle match for the tag team titles. You can't call it Dumpster. That's trademarked.
It is?
Pretty sure. Dumpster is a brand name.
Just like Broken is.
Really?
At least now we know who owns that trademark.
Yeah, the Hardys.
Yeah, that's been proven now. Anyway, the Hardys aren't on this pay-per-view, though. Who is on this pay-per-view, though, is Mick Foley, a.k.a. Cactus Jack in this case, and Chainsaw Charlie, Terry Funk, taking on the New Age Outlaws, Road Dogg Jesse James, and B.A. Billy Gunn. And the rules of this are quite simple. It's a casket match. Put both opponents in a dumpster and close the lid, just like a casket match. Put someone in and close the lid. Nice and simple. Unfortunately, at one point, they kind of ruined that idea because they forced the lid of the dumpster into the dumpster. Why? Because this is a complete... It was a brawl. Who honestly expected this to be a wrestling match? But, you know, this was a weapons match and kind of a let's say, non-scientific. Gotch and Hackenschmidt, this wasn't. So they used ladders, they used chairs, they used baking sheets, they used the dumpster. And there's a part where I'm trying to remember who's on the ladder. I believe it was Mick Foley and Billy Gunn are on a ladder fighting. Terry Funk gets into the ring, and Road Dogg gets into the ring and hits Terry Funk with, I think it was a baking sheet. Terry goes into the ladder, and Foley and Gunn go off the ladder, and like we said, through the top. You know, they caved in the lid. So, here's my question. Would that still count? Because technically it's closed. It's just beyond closed. Do you think that would count if they actually threw both members of one team in?
Patrick?
Yes?
Given what happens on Raw the next night, it pretty much means all in the long run anyway.
This is true. So they end up fighting backstage and end up going near what has to be one of the tallest damn dumpsters I've ever seen in my life. Where the hell did this dumpster come from?
Well, I'm assuming it was probably made in a factory.
Har, har.
Everybody gets one.
Does that make up for my spoon comment?
100%. We're even. Everybody gets one.
All right. Jeez. So, I'm trying to remember how it ends. Oh, so Foley ends up forcing both of the Outlaws onto a forklift with Terry Funk driving a forklift. Yes, that happened. Yes, I was scared.
Stop. Yeah, because that's what you want to do. You want to trust crazy Terry Funk driving a damn forklift.
It's similar to what Jim Ross said. He said, you don't need a crazy man driving a forklift.
In no universe is Terry Funk driving a forklift a good idea.
Indeed, but at least in this case, he was able to maneuver quite well. Well enough, in fact, that he dumped the Outlaws into this super dumpster that had to be, like, a legit 10 feet high. And Cactus Jack closes the lid, and then Terry Funk, just for the hell of it, puts the forklift down on top of the lid of the dumpster. Therefore, your winners and new tag team champions, Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie. 24 hours later, this would be proven moot. Because the very next night, the Outlaws would complain and would win, saying that they were not thrown into the official match dumpster, you know, the one that was broke, so it shouldn't count. They'd win, and they would get a steel cage match for the tag team championships, in which the DX Army was officially born and beat the ever-loving hell out of Cactus Jack and Terry Funk, and the Outlaws the very next night would win the tag belts back. This would be the closest until WrestleMania 22 to Mick Foley getting his WrestleMania moment.
Yeah, but that Edge match is something to see, though. If you're a wrestling fan and you've never seen that match, you owe it to yourself to give it a look.
In my hometown, once again.
Oh, quiet, Mark.
No, my name's Patrick.
Uh-huh, sure, let's go with that.
I was with Mark last night at a wrestling show.
Anyways.
His name is Mark. Anyway.
Can we get to the damn review, please?
Yes, we can. So, yeah, new tag team champions, but like we said, the very next night, this would all be proven to be worthless.
Yes, due to the very uncommonly known wrong dumpster rule.
Extremely uncommon. So uncommon, it's never been mentioned again because this match has never happened again. Is that a bad thing, though?
Yeah, the joke there would be that the match was trash, and that's why. Would it be too cliche to call this match my trash of the night? But
well,
I'm not actually sure.
Anyway.
I thought it would be funny. All right, moving on.
Moving on, our next contest, our sub-main event, and I'd say it's worthwhile of that. Kane versus The Undertaker. No. We're talking about 14, not 20.
Well, yeah, this is the very first time that these two would face off one-on-one. The story behind this, of course, is very well known, and we'll go ahead and recap it here real quick for you. Taker and the Pretty Boy Shawn Michaels got into a beef. They faced off at Ground Zero. Michaels got himself disqualified. Taker won the revenge, so they came up with this concept that was brand new at the time called Hell in a Cell. Hell in a Cell would happen at Bad Blood 1997, where this big, tall, super giant red mother would rip off the cage door and tombstone the Undertaker, handing Shawn Michaels a victory. That person would be Kane, who would be revealed to be the Undertaker's brother, courtesy of Paul Bearer and many, many promos leading up to this particular contest. The thought process was is that Taker made a promise to his parents, whoever they may be, that he would never lay his hands on Kane until Kane desecrates his parents' graves on an episode of Raw leading into WrestleMania 14, and then therefore Undertaker says, "I will go through hell to fight my brother." And here we are.
And there's one glaring thing that you're skipping over, like one very glaring thing you're skipping over.
Are we referring to Taker being lit on fire inside of a casket at the Royal Rumble?
Correct!
Yeah. To be fair, that's kind of the biggest case of somebody getting what was coming to them I've ever seen in pro wrestling as well, though.
Yes, but you mentioned the fact that, you know, Taker says, "I will go through hell to face you, Kane." That was in his return after Kane sets his casket on fire. And it kind of also plays into the main event, because that match from Rumble 98 was a casket match between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. And
where Shawn Michaels would blow out his back by taking a back bump on the edge of the casket.
Because my guess is he undershot that.
I actually think he overshot. I think he was supposed to land on the casket lid and just went straight and landed on the siding of it instead.
Yeah,
but neither here nor there.
Yes, but Kane would end up costing Undertaker that match, and then would then bolt or lock the lid of the casket shut, and would go after it. Padlock it. Thank you. Sorry. Would go after it with first an axe, and then would dump gasoline and set it on fire. Of course, lo and behold, they get the casket open. Undertaker's not in it, and he's not seen for a few weeks. He returns and says, "I will go through the fires of hell to face you, Kane," and here we are. By the way, there's also one other thing we need to mention before this match. It's what happens immediately before this match.
We'll talk about him in one second, but first I do want to also point out that I do believe Taker's return would happen in February, the night after No Way Out of Texas.
That sounds about right.
I'm almost certain. I'm not positive, but I'm almost certain.
Like I said, that sounds about right. That would be about 3 weeks, maybe
four. All right, let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and discuss Pete Rose.
Yes, WWE Hall of Famer Pete Rose. The only Hall of Fame he'll ever get into.
You're damn right he's a Hall of Famer. He should be in the other one, too. Hall of Fame's not for choir boys.
That's neither here nor there. But, yeah. So, for some weird reason, apparently, much like Jennifer Flowers was with the Intercontinental title match, Pete Rose is supposed to be the guest ring announcer for this one. Nope. Instead, he just cracks every possible Curse of the Bambino joke towards the, you know, Boston crowd who essentially want to see him murdered. In this case, Kane turns face.
Well, I want to point out that Kane has arguably my favorite line on this, or Pete Rose has arguably my favorite line on this entire show. I left a pair of tickets. Absolutely, you're damn right. I left a pair of belt tickets for WrestleMania for Bill Buckner, but he couldn't bend over to pick him up. How about it?
I thought the other one, hearing him go, "My buddy Bucky Dent says hello."
I hate the Yankees, so screw Bucky Dent with a rusted fork.
I know, but it's still a good line.
Bucky.
So,
Dent.
If you're a Yankees fan, or if you're a Boston fan, absolutely. You could also argue Aaron bleeping Boone, but that's neither here nor there once again. So,
100%.
Yeah. So, Kane turns face because he took down Pete Rose. Why did they think this was a good idea?
Yeah, in what universe is having Kane be the one to attack Pete Rose a bright idea?
Like, I understand that it's the whole idea that Kane is a monster who will stop at nothing and destroy everybody. But Kane is not the right person here because, once again, Rose is cutting anti-Boston jokes. He's getting booed out of the building, arguably the worst heat out of anybody on this show. Let's have the big 7-foot-tall bad guy wearing red and black be the one to tombstone him.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Vince Russo.
Does Russo? Oh, yeah, he does. Yeah, because he started in late 97. All right. Also, my guess is they told Undertaker, hey, we want you to do this, and he just looked at me and went, hell no.
Taker's like, yeah, you don't pay me enough to deal with him.
That was probably the highest paid wrestler on the roster. So, yes, this is Kane and Undertaker the very first time. And in my eyes,
this might be their best ever one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just about to say, this might be their best ever one-on-one match. I know a lot of people have critically praised a couple of their 2010 matches. Frankly, I didn't care for any of them. But I actually thought that this match was really good the first time I won it. This is exactly what you want from a big man brawl, and this has all of the major spots that you would expect from an Undertaker match at a WrestleMania.
Yeah, primary school and tombstones and snake eyes and everything. You get everything in this match, including
four
tombstone pile drivers.
I'm pretty sure he even does his suicide dive at one point as well during the course of this match.
Yes, he does, because I believe he ends up going through the table. I think he misses Kane, and Kane puts him through the table. I think. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is. So, this would be kind of the first time, though, that somebody would need a lot of tombstones to be defeated. Undertaker hits him three times, with a tombstone. Kane hits one of his own as well. So now it's kind of a cliche thing because Undertaker can't win a WrestleMania match without at least two. And I'm saying this as somebody who, you know, just is watching several Undertaker matches because I'm rewatching all the WrestleManias. And in the two matches that I watched from him today, the first one he hits two, the second one he hits three, and then he loses that one. Yes, that's where I am. So,
you made it to 30?
I'm on 31, bub.
Nice. You might actually get this in before you leave for Orlando.
Told you. Anyway, so this was actually, this was a very good match, and I'm one of them that's in agreement that this might actually be their best match, because eventually their matches would just become slower and slower and more one-sided. See WrestleMania 20, and would not have. Here it's a thing, because this is, you know, we're seeing brother versus brother here. You know, so this was the first time. This was the biggest time that you would see it. Then it would become big because it was an Inferno match. Big because it was the first time it was the American Badass taking on Kane. Big because, yeah. You know, oh, big because it was Undertaker's return. So,
trivia.
I still think this is their best one.
Trivia for you. You ready?
Yes.
What was the first American Badass Taker versus Kane match? Do you remember?
Not SummerSlam 2000.
That's the first pay-per-view one, yes.
No, I don't know the exact first one.
That no, that's the one I'm thinking. That's the first pay-per-view one for sure.
Oh, I was thinking you just meant first match in general, like it was on TV. Then yes, it's SummerSlam 2000. The only VHS I still own.
I have that on VHS tape around here somewhere too, actually.
I know exactly where I am. They have that whole pay-per-view on VHS recorded.
You pirate, how dare you?
Let's not get started with that right now.
No, we got a main event to get to.
Indeed we do. And it happens right now. It is, once again, the main event of WrestleMania 14. Essentially, if there was ever a match that truly felt like a main event, big fight feel, it's this one. The champion, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, having held the belt since that fateful night in Montreal, takes on the leader of the new generation.
Wait. Stop. Something happened in Montreal?
No, Shawn Michaels won the belt. Clean as a whistle, middle of the ring, made Bret Hart submit.
I remember hearing about that. All right, carry on.
Yeah, you'd hear about it. 06, 97,
ad nauseum.
You'd see it again 1 year later at Survivor Series.
You'd pretty much not stop hearing about it, well, ever.
Yeah, anyway. And they're facing off, and he's facing off against the leader of the new generation, the good new generation, Stone Cold Steve Austin. And, oh, by the way, the enforcer for this match, the outside referee, the Muhammad Ali of this match, would be the baddest man on the planet, Iron Mike Tyson. 2.5 million dollars on one match. Because that's how much Tyson cost.
I do believe the words you are looking for, to paraphrase Cuba Gooding Jr. from Jerry Maguire, show me the money!
That might be an understatement.
That's legit.
And not only that, you have to deal with Shawn Michaels. This is not 2002 to 2010 Shawn Michaels. This is 1998 Shawn Michaels.
Basically what we're trying to say, this is partially crippled and gigantic douche Shawn Michaels.
And
what?
And drugged up.
Oh, well, yeah, there's that. You remember the whole press conference debacle?
Was it press conference or was it public workout? Because they had both.
I think he showed up intoxicated to the press conference as well.
The one that I'm thinking of is the public workout where Shawn gets hit with a battery and walks out.
No, I was thinking of the press conference where he shows up intoxicated and they don't even let him talk.
Can't say I blame them. There's
Real quick here, needless to say, Shawn was not in a good headspace around these times.
So bad, in fact, that there is a story specifically from this exact moment, that as soon as Undertaker finishes with his match with Kane, he takes the tape off of his hands and just replaces it with more tape. He takes a chair down at gorilla position until Shawn is ready to walk out and tells Shawn, if you do not do what is right, you will not get out of here alive. And proceeded to sit at the gorilla position in his gear and everything for the entirety of this match. And the second the bell rings, when the match ends, he goes and changes like nothing happened. That's the kind of Shawn Michaels we're dealing with here, where he had to be threatened by the leader of the locker room that if he didn't do business, business would be done for him. Boy, that sounds familiar. Anyway.
Yeah, really. Another story from around this time here, since we're talking WrestleMania here as well, to give you an idea of the state of mind that Shawn was in at this time frame, and thankfully he's gotten much better about this now, and kudos to Shawn for turning his life and his career around and coming back and reestablishing his reputation as one of, if not the best of all time. I won't say he is the best to me. He's not. He's up there, but he's not the best all time. That being said, I want to take you back to WrestleMania X7 that we covered on the show before. I think we actually addressed this story when we covered X7 as well. The streak was not supposed to be a streak. It was supposed to end at 17. Do you remember the story?
Yes, I do. It was supposedly Undertaker was going to face Triple H, you know, the streak match that never happened if you're the WWE. And I believe Triple H was supposed to beat The Undertaker when Shawn Michaels comes out of nowhere and interferes.
Shawn Michaels was supposed to super kick The Undertaker into a pedigree.
Which they would do 11 years later.
Yes, but Shawn Michaels was supposed to super kick Undertaker into a pedigree at WrestleMania 17, and Triple H would have ended the streak in its infancy before it was really even a streak.
Because, let's be honest, the streak didn't become the streak until 1 year later when Undertaker moved to 10-0 at WrestleMania 18.
Defeating?
Woo!
The Nature Boy Ric Flair, in my opinion, the greatest wrestler of all time. Moving on.
Yeah. So, this is the kind of Shawn Michaels we're dealing with here. That being said, not only does Shawn Michaels do what's, pardon the pun, best for business, he seemingly does his best to make Shawn Michaels, or rather, to make Stone Cold look like $1 million. This was a hell of a match. This was worthwhile of a main event. This was a great match.
To be fair, with the threat of an Undertaker ass-whooping looming, can you really blame him?
You could argue an Undertaker ass-whipping, a Stone Cold ass-whipping, a legit one. And my guess is Mike Tyson knows what's up. And he probably also knows Stone Cold's winning this. If Shawn Michaels does anything fluky, that right hand that Tyson gives Michaels at the end of a match, that might become a bit more stiff, we'll say.
We'll go with snug.
Yeah. So, those are probably the worst three people to piss off. And that doesn't include Vince, who will tear his ear off.
Yes, it would be around this time frame that Vince would have ripped him a new anus.
Yeah. That's an understatement. So, I mean, for the most part, though, Shawn Michaels does dominate the match, but this was actually a really good match. And this also includes Triple H and Chyna actually being thrown out supremely early in the match. Because Kyoto pretty much just had absolutely none of their interference very early on. We're talking first 5 minutes?
Well,
and they're thrown out.
I think done in order to keep the focus on Shawn and Steve where it should have, Shawn, Steve, and Mike where it should have been.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt about that. Because it becomes a case of, okay, we know Triple H and Chyna won't be involved. This obviously means Tyson's going to be involved. And Tyson would get involved. Tyson would get involved when referee Mike Chioda, is this the one where he was murdered with a chair? Or is this the one where he was flattened with Shawn Michaels' ass in his face?
I honestly
This was the butt in the face. So he gets crushed in the corner where he's murdered with the chair was 1 year later. So, I mean, Stone Cold crushes him with the chair.
Poor Coyote, always getting his ass whooped.
Yeah. So, I actually like the finish to this, where it's counter, 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 stunner out of nowhere. I know, not the RKO, shut up.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Because I think Shawn Michaels goes for sweet chin music, Austin blocks it, kicks him in the stomach, Michaels ducks out of it, hits the ropes, or no, Michaels hits the ropes, goes for sweet chin music one more time, Austin once again blocks it, spins him around, wham, bam, stunner, thank you, ma'am. Who makes the count? Well, the referee named Mike, just not Coyote, the other Mike, Mike Tyson. Delivering the fastest three count I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was going to question that there. I think Sean had a legitimate beef that the fits was in.
What, are we talking the Boston screw job?
Yeah, it is entirely possible that that may have been Mike Tyson breaking the sound barrier with the speed of that three count. I mean, good grief.
I mean, we're talking one, two, three, it's over. I think the only person I've ever seen count faster is Shane McMahon. Because Shane delivers the absolute fastest fast count I've ever seen.
Over the Edge 99.
Was it that?
Or are you referring to the one from Survivor Series 98?
No, that wasn't a fast count.
He quick counts Austin in that match.
I guess it would be the 99 one then, because he loses to the Undertaker.
Undertaker pinning Austin?
Yeah, and Shane delivers like a blink and you miss it three count.
Yeah, that's Over the Edge 1999, the forgotten pay-per-view for obvious reasons.
Yeah, let's not bring that up. So, and then,
I said for obvious reasons, I didn't say what they were.
I know. So Austin and Tyson are then the ones celebrating, to which Michaels pops up rather quickly after the stunner and asks him what the hell is going on here and pokes and prods Mike Tyson, which is probably something you shouldn't do. Michaels goes for a right hand. Yeah, no. Tyson goes for a right hand. Out goes Michaels. And then that's how we finish here. So Tyson and Austin are the ones standing tall at the end of the pay-per-view. And this will be Michael's final appearance in the WWE in ring for 4.5 years. Not counting him as the commissioner and everything. So, to the point, Michaels isn't even on Raw the next night. Triple H pretty much just cuts a scathing promo saying that Michaels dropped the ball and said, where you drop it, I pick it up and run with it, and that's where the DX Army is formed and pretty much proceeds to raise all hell and chaos for the next year.
Yeah, the very first thing that Triple H does in charge of DX is bring back Sean Waltman, a.k.a. the 1-2-3 Kid, now known as X-Pac.
And the Lightning Kid, and Six, and Six-Pac, and God knows how over many other six puns there are.
He's got to be up there with Hardcore Holly for some of the dumbest gimmick names of all time. Good grief.
Yeah, but that would still be second dumbest. Nobody can touch the guy with the dumbest.
Ed Leslie?
Correct!
Kim?
Booty Man. I say no more.
The man with no name. All right, we're getting off track. Let's go ahead and put a nice tidy little bow on this here. I actually do believe that we are officially done covering this show.
I was going to say, that was WrestleMania 14. What would happen afterward? Well, yeah. Raw would still lose the next night. Believe it or not. However, from there, that would be the last time that they would lose. That would be the 82nd consecutive week that they would lose. Because
yeah,
the following Monday after. What?
I was just about to say, yeah, the following Monday, it would be the official birth of the Mr. McMahon character as far as a regular on-screen occurrence, as Austin and McMahon would kick off in earnest, and we would see the WWF return of McFoley, this time as corporate Dude Love in order to stop Austin versus McMahon from happening.
Indeed, and that would be the first time that Raw would beat Monday Night Nitro in legitimately almost 2 years. The night after WrestleMania would not be the last time Raw would lose, but it would be one of the last times.
I want to say the last time Raw would lose to Nitro would be July 7th, 1998, which is the Goldberg-Hogan Georgia Dome match.
Which, yeah, that kind of makes sense.
I think that is the last time that Nitro beats Raw.
So what were you going to talk about?
I was going to say, if you want to find out where else the WWF goes from here, you'll be joining us in August, as we will be on the Highway to Hell for the August 1998 edition of SummerSlam. I think that would be an interesting thing to do, is kind of fill in the blanks as to how we got to where we got to with the various major companies being where they are for August as compared to where they were in March.
Indeed, as I'm trying to find it.
What do you mean?
You are a little bit wrong. The last time that Monday Night Nitro beats Monday Night Raw would be October 26, 1999. Excuse me, October 26, 1998.
Really?
Yes.
I wasn't aware that they had a win over Raw in that late into 1998.
As a matter of fact, from the looks of it, except for the very first episode, Nitro would actually beat Raw every episode, every Monday, for all of August and September of 98. Granted, two of those Monday Night Raw was not on, because this would be the time period where the USA Network still aired the U.S. Open. And the only time that Raw would win would be the very first August episode. After that six-week span, the only other time where Nitro would cleanly beat Raw would be October 26, 1998. After that, the only time Nitro would beat Raw is if Raw was not on.
Right, due to either the U.S. Open or the Westminster Dog Show or whatever.
So, yeah. As much as the 82 weeks is a big deal, I think Raw actually had a longer win streak against them until the end. But be that as it may, yeah, indeed. I think bridging the gaps every now and then with pay-per-views would be a good idea. So this is an idea that we're going to revisit in the future, the next time most likely being August of 98, when we cover arguably ECW's greatest pay-per-view, one of the best SummerSlams, and yeah.
Hey, speak for yourself. I actually enjoyed the Jay Leno match a whole lot more than I thought I was going to when I watched it.
Jay Leno. Anyway, before we get to August, or even WrestleMania 33 next Sunday, we need to get to the big finish here. As always, the best and the worst, and the cash and the trash of this show. We always start with the best and the worst match, and, well, why stop now? Harry, what is your worst match of this show?
Give me one quick second.
One.
Funny. Honestly, not a whole lot bad on this show, so I think I have to kind of go with something that I've never really cared for in general, so I'm going to go with the Tag Team Battle Royal. I've never been a huge fan of Battle Royals anyway, And let's be honest, there were a whole lot of people in that match who did a whole lot of freaking nothing. Let me run down the list of teams real quick. Legion of Doom, Rock and Roll Express, the original Rock and Roll Express, them going into the Hall of Fame this year. The New Midnight Express, too much before they were too cool and before they were over. The Truth Commission, yeah, nobody remembers them. The Quebecers.
Hey,
I remember
Recon.
I remember the Truth Commission, too, but in fairness, I'm a Don Callis mark. Anyway, the Quebecers, the Godwins, the Headbangers, so 1997 WWF. Farooq and Kama Mustafa, yes, because Farooq, 1 year later, had been resorted to being in a tag team battle royal. D'Lo Brown and Mark Henry, Savio Vega and Miguel Perez, Jose Estrada and Jesus Castillo, basically meaning Los Boricuas got two teams, Skull and Abel, hello, Harris Brothers, Bradshaw and Chains, yes, because Bradshaw decided to team with Brian King Lee, and Flash Funk and Steve Black. And Flash, Too Cold Scorpio, and Steve. I'm done, Patrick. Go ahead, take over.
Not only does Los Boricuas get two teams, but yeah, so does the Nation of Domination and the Disciples of Apocalypse. That's 6 out of the 15 teams.
Oh boy.
For me, I'm going with a different form of a tag match. I'm going with the mixed tag team match. And while, yes, the match was meant to essentially make a stable look good to the fans, why, I don't know.
I can think of two reasons.
Her voice and her kicks?
That would be neither of the two reasons.
That's what I figured. Why are you trying to make her look credible as a wrestler? She's not a wrestler. Sable is eye candy. And I realize I'm saying this knowing that somehow Brock Lesnar could come to my house tomorrow and murder me. But.
Legit.
Yeah. But. This does Mark Merrill and Goldust, although, I mean, they're not helping themselves, more harm than good. I actually feel bad out of the four people in this match. I feel bad for Luna Vachon because she's good. Mark Merrill was not good. He was better as Johnny B. Badd. Goldust, or excuse me, in this case, the artist formerly known as Goldust, because, you know, he's not wearing gold, just... I feel bad for Luna Vachon. And while, yes, Sable hits the TKO, clean as a whistle, that's about the only good thing in this match. Everything else was just botch, botch, botch. So, yeah, mixed tag match for me. Moving on. What is your best match of the night?
See, that's a difficult question to answer for this show because there are three really good matches, but for all for different reasons. There's what does set up for tonight, what sets up going forward, and what sets up to remind us of what they're capable of. I'm going to go with what was actually best on the night, and therefore I'm going to go with the main event of Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin. And Shawn doing the right thing for the business and going out there and putting in a star-making performance for Stone Cold in order to help launch what would become the Attitude Era.
Okay. There's really no other match that you could even attempt to make an argument with. Not that there's bad, there's actually more, I would argue, there's more good matches than bad matches on this show. But, once again, if that main event fails, Vince McMahon is in a whole hell of a lot of trouble. It's as high stakes as it can get. And it succeeds. Shawn Michaels does what's right. Tyson being used brings in fans and gets more eyes on the product. And the WWF is a mere 3 years away from winning the Ultimate War. Without a doubt, it's the main event for me. because it's actually a very, very good match. And if you go into it without knowing all of the backstory, it's still a very good match. To me, if you go in knowing the backstory, that makes it even better. Because you're watching a possibly inebriated Shawn Michaels put on one of the gutsiest performances he's ever put on. And you can tell in his face several times during the match, he's in an excruciating amount of pain. So for him to go out and pull that off, I don't applaud what he was doing off camera, but I applaud him doing the right thing and helping Stone Cold look like $1 million, and then Stone Cold can go and carry the company on his back for the next 2 years, 2.5 years, until he's hit by a car at Survivor Series 99. So, geez, 2.5 years, 1.5 years. And
damn that.
Do his part in helping. Wow. Jeez. Alrighty. Cash and trash time. I have a feeling we're going to agree on this one. What is your cash for this?
Pete Rose.
Okay.
I am 100% serious when I say that, too. I freaking love Pete's involved. I've always been a huge fan of his work with the WWF. I thought that every single time that the WWF called on him to do something for the company, he brought it. And it's just one of those things that it makes me proud to see an outsider come into this world and actually treat it seriously. So I'm going to give my cash for this show to Pete Rose and his promo. Patrick, what's your cash?
Remember, folks, he made 3 appearances all at WrestleManias. Hang on. And then it only took 4 years for him to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. And then he made a couple more appearances after. You can't avoid it. And I know it's kind of a cop-out, but you can't avoid it. You have to bring it up. The Attitude Era starting. You could make the argument that it started as early as a year prior. If you look at what was going on at WrestleMania 13, you could make the argument that that's the unofficial start. But with Austin's win here, this is what's going to catapult the WWF to arguably their biggest boom and their biggest business period ever. Even over Hogan. Now, it's kind of weird that we've now covered what is argued as the beginning and the end of it, but look at the difference between the two. You know, the Fleet Center, 19,000 people. Not that that's a bad thing. Look at the end of it. 67,000 at the Astrodome? That's absurd. And Steve Austin having the title, or at least, you know, being the main focus, helped make that happen. Sure, was there behind-the-scenes stuff? Absolutely. Quite frankly, what top star of a company doesn't occasionally try and pull that card? We talked about last week. So the Attitude Era finally being the thing that brought WCW to its knees, it started here and now. So my cash is the start of the Attitude Era, the official start of the Attitude Era, here and now. I know it's a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason.
Hey, no, that's a damn cop-out is what that is.
Oh, shut up. No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. What's your trash? And don't say my answer.
You copping out. How did you know I was going there? No.
Gee, how'd I know?
Jennifer Flowers. You know how little this means to history? I Googled her and it literally said, who?
That's a Jerry Lawler joke. Boo.
No, Yes, I understand that she was relevant at that time frame, but this is one of those ones that doesn't hold up to the test of time there. And the only good thing about her was the Rock ragging her relentlessly in his interview. Go away.
That's all?
Yes, that's all the breath I feel the need to waste on her.
Okay. Well, sorry, I didn't know.
Oh, no, you're fine. That's all the breath I felt the need to waste on her.
Yeah. And she's a singer, by the way.
She's a what now?
She's a singer.
Yeah,
she said
sure.
That she and Jeff she said she and Jeff Jarrett had to do a duet.
J-E-double-S-J-A-double-R-E-double-T.
You forgot the ha-ha-ha.
I don't feel the need to ha-ha-ha. What's your trash, Patrick?
Shamrock looking like an idiot. Shamrock looks like an idiot. With a special mention of Chris Warren and the DX band. Or Jim Johnston standing in the background looking like an idiot while Chris Warren and the DX band plays. Because guess what? Jim Johnston was the bass player. But no, it's Ken Shamrock looking like an idiot and never being able to actually beat The Rock. Like I said, Rumble, Rock outsmarts him. Here, let go of the damn ankle lock. I get that you're in the zone and everything, but I would think that you would know the zone should end when the bell rings and you've won the second biggest title in the company.
I don't want to be champion.
It's almost as bad as the excuse he used to get out of an AAW booking. My promoter didn't tell me. But he gets in the zone, breaks the Rock's ankle, bloodies the Rock up, I might add, cut my mouth, and doesn't let go. And then attacks the referees. He deserved to be disqualified. He looks like an idiot. And he would never beat the Rock for the title. They should have made the King of the Ring fight for the belts, but at the same time, if they did that, we wouldn't get the SummerSlam ladder match, and that would be a pity.
I would once again take this opportunity to point out that Shamrock was never exactly the brightest bulb in the light. He's about as good as my metaphor right now, actually. Jesus. Well, Goatless, he was never the brightest crayon in the box once again because I drew a blank on the other one that I was going to say.
Okay. Anyway, as we wrap things up here on the final March 98 show of Wrestling Unwrapped, our final show before the show of shows, the show that is WrestleMania 33, we'll talk about that in a minute. What's your final rating of WrestleMania 14?
There's a certain rating that you give the show, but I think you have to increase it in order due to what comes out of this particular show. Like, the show itself requires a set rating, but I think the importance of the show makes it stand out more than your traditional WrestleMania does in hindsight. It's like you said, this was the biggest gamble that the WWF had taken since WrestleMania 1 itself. And obviously, in the long term, it paid off, and in the short term, even it paid off as well. Well, I want to say that one of the first times that Raw beat Nitro in the ratings once again was when Tyson first showed up on Raw, wasn't it?
No, this is still part of the 82 weeks. Tyson being there, Raw never beat Nitro.
Oh, how about that? All right, well, either way, though, but it does set in the process, the chain of events that does lead to Raw beating Nitro. So as far as the show itself goes, when you factor in historical importance as well, I'm going to give the show a 7. If we're judging based solely on the show itself, it's probably closer to a 6. Does that make sense?
Yep.
All right, your turn. What's your overall rating for this particular show, Mr. Ketza?
See, to me, I always see people knock WrestleMania 14. As a matter of fact, I see a lot of people knock WrestleMania 14 and saying that the only memorable thing is, you know, Stone Cold. But as we've been talking about it, and even when I went back to rewatch it, sure, there's a couple of bad things. The Battle Royal, the mixed tag match, you know, being, and Shamrock looking like an idiot. But to me, I find that there's actually quite a bit more good than bad. Taker and Kane is not bad by any means. It'd go down from here, not up. Austin and Michaels was very good. Rock and Shamrock, aside from the finish, is, I mean, it's Shamrock steamrolling the Rock. What do you want? Triple H and Owen, pretty good. Light heavyweight title match, too short for its own good, but what you got was good. I would actually give the show a straight up 7, even counting its place in history, you know, what we've talked about over the past, you know, almost hour and a half. I think it could stand on its own, even if you go in not knowing the backstory of everything. It can hold its own. And I would say that it's worth a watch. If nothing else, even if you know it only for Stone Cold's thing, you know, Stone Cold winning the belt and then the Attitude Era officially becoming, it's still worth the watch, and then some. I'd argue the best of the three pay-per-views we've covered, and I mean that.
I don't know if I. Well, actually, I think I did give this the highest rating of the three.
I know we knocked Uncensored.
We weren't exactly nice to the ECW show either. We said it was one of ECW's weaker efforts.
Yeah, so out of the three, I'd argue this is the best one. Of course, it's kind of the biggest, most well-known, highest quality, but with reason.
Unfortunately, though, saying that it's one of the best ones isn't saying a whole lot given the quality of the opposition for this particular month.
I mean, yeah.
Regardless, all in all, though, I can find something positive on every show that we did, because I think I might have given Uncensored a 6 as well. I may have given it a 5. Actually, I think I gave it a 5.
Sounds about right. So, now that we've got that out of the way, I was going to say, I offer one extra prediction. I offer a prediction for next Sunday. Which one do you think will end up being better, 14 or 33?
I think 33 is going to surprise a lot of people because they have the talent to pull it off.
They have the talent, but in this case, they're going to have the time.
Well, there's that, yes, granted. But at the same time, though, I think they have the talent to pull it off. Therefore, I'm looking forward to 33. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's plenty to bitch about because, you know, obviously there's always something to bitch about. But at the same time, I think there are more than enough competent people on this roster right now that they can drag even a middling card up into the upper echelon of WrestleMania's histories. And let's not forget either, WrestleMania itself isn't for us. Us super fans anyway. WrestleMania is more for the casual fan. Us super fans get our fix on the night after WrestleMania and hopefully the SmackDown Live first time after WrestleMania as well.
I mean, as we've mentioned before, and I'm not mentioning it, you know, to show off. I swear I'm not. Yes, I'm going to be there. I leave for Florida Tuesday. And out of the three that I've either been at or will be at, in Sunday's case, this is probably the one that I'm least looking forward to. I was looking forward to 30 because of the idea of Brian winning the belt and because it was going to be my first. I was looking forward to 32 being a part of that crowd, which that stadium is gorgeous, and, you know, the Hell in a Cell match, and unfortunately I ended up being let down by the No Holds Barred match with Dean and Brock. I cannot get my head around, and yes, I know, it's not for the regular fans, despite what certain people want to knock other people for saying. I'm talking about a certain writer for 411 Mania, I think, who said that it wasn't for the super fan like us. And then he got knocked for it. He's right. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm glad that the weather cleared up, because originally it said that it was supposed to thunderstorm. It's not. I'm looking forward to the 80-degree weather. I just want... There's one thing I want out of this. I don't want Brock and Goldberg to be last. If it's last, I'll make the midnight after WrestleMania show a hell of a lot earlier. Well, maybe not. I'll make it 5 minutes earlier. I don't think it's going to go last. I actually think Randy and Bray may actually go last, because that's how they've advertised it.
I think if the main event for next Sunday is going to be Roman and Undertaker, personally.
So then is it Taker's last match?
I don't know. I hope not. I hope he doesn't go out against Roman, but anything's possible.
I think if it's not, next year in New Orleans is.
That I agree with. All right. Tonight's episode of Wrestling Unwrapped has been brought to you by the Madhouse Toy Chest. stores.ebay.com/Madhouse Toy Chest. If you're a fan of anything wrestling, you can find DVDs, action figures, VHS tapes, magazines, posters, and a litany of other wrestling-related merchandise and memorabilia. That is stores.ebay.com/Madhouse Toy Chest. Mention that you heard this advertisement here on Wrestling Unwrapped and receive a free gift with your purchase.
As well, we are a presentation of the W2M Network. For more information, including our past episodes, our written reviews, which we will get back to, we promise we will. It's just, you know, a really bad time for both of us timing-wise. And, of course, other great articles by Gary, Paul, Sean, Harry, myself, and a whole host of others as part of the W2M family. Be sure to check out W2Mnet.com. As far as next week, I'm going to be there. Doing a Woo reaction is going to be a little tough, especially with the fact that I'm now going to a show after WrestleMania, because I hate myself, and I don't care about sleep. It's going to be kind of tough. We'll see if we can do a reaction show. We'll find out. In terms of 2 weeks from tonight, we will be back covering one of the worst WrestleManias of all time. It's either going to be 9 or 11. Can we please do 11?
I don't care.
We will be covering WrestleMania 11, headlined by Lawrence Taylor versus Bam Bam Bigelow. Why? Because it will be the two shows of April Fool's Month, where we will cover WrestleMania 11 and definitely Spring Stampede 2000, where we institute a special set of rules. It will be WCW rules, where we will have a stopwatch, and we will only talk about a match for as long as that match goes. Why? Because it's a 2 hour and 45 minute pay-per-view with 14 matches. God. And at some point we'll get to Heroes of Wrestling. We'll think of when, some other time. That will be 2 weeks from now. So, for Harry Broadhurst and for Sean Garner, as always, I am Patrick Ketza. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Wrestling Unwrapped, talk about WrestleMania 14 here on the W2M Network. We will see you in 2 weeks.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.